Daddy, what are you doing?
We're recording a podcast.
Who's listening?
Islander fans are listening.
Where are they?
Well, they're right here.
Welcome to the Isles Faithful Podcast with your host, Michael Sherline.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Isles Faithful Podcast. This is episode 9. I'm your host, Michael Sherline. Thank you for joining me again this week. We got a lot of exciting stuff happening. Tonight is game number 1. The Islanders open up their season on the road in Carolina. There's a big group of fans down there, all partying and tailgating right now for Isles Meetup Charlotte. We got Devin from Yes Men Outfitters down there as well. It's going to be a great time. Look for them on Twitter. All sorts of different hijinks going on right now. It's awesome. Good luck, guys. Have fun down there. This week on the Isles Faithful Podcast, we have former NHLer Mark Parrish joining me. And we talk about all the different stuff that happened during the offseason. We talk about some of the things that could happen here moving forward. And we take a trip down memory lane. Unfortunately, or fortunately for you guys, we went a little long. So that's going to be the only thing we're going to have this week. There's just no point in even really trying to squeeze anything else in. I didn't want to cut anything down. It was just such an awesome time with Mark. Thank you again, Mark. Hope you enjoy it. Here we go. All right. So joining me this week on episode 9 of the Isles Faithful Podcast is former NHLer, former New York Islander, and Mr. Net Front Presence himself, Mark Parrish. Mark, how's it going?
It's doing great, Michael. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. I mean, we've been trying to meet up for the last couple of days here, but as we figured out, our lives are strikingly parallel with kids and their lives basically running ours.
Yes, I've learned that it's really hard to get a hold of somebody that's like mirror image of your life.
I wish it was mirrored in more ways than one, but hey, I'll take this as the one thing. All right, so, I mean, how was your summer, man? I mean, you seemed like you were pretty busy with the Beauty League, the Beauty League.
Yeah, Duh Beauty. I was going to say, get it right. I've been corrected many, many times by those guys that it's Duh Beauty League. What a fun league. What a great idea that Ben Hankinson, Chris McAlpine, Keith Ballard came up with a few years ago. And it was kind of one of those things where they thought like, hey, let's get their group of guys as agents together and maybe start skating just a little bit to get them more prepared for the seasons, as opposed to just coming in doing 3 weeks right before the season. And you know, it's just the way the league is going. The guys stay on the ice more and more for longer each year, each summer, each off season. That's just the way of the dodo. They fell onto something that was incredible. The first summer a few years ago was pretty good up until August. Like there were some people showing up and at first they didn't even want to charge. But then by August, they find out that every Monday, Wednesday were just jam packed with people. It's a testament to how Minnesota truly is the lost province when it comes to hockey. People are just craving hockey in July and August now. And now this year, 3 years later, at the beginning of July, the first night, it was a jam-packed house for the whole evening. The players get into it. It's 4-on-4. It's all offense, obviously. The goalies even enjoy it, even though those guys are just shell-shocked most nights. But it's something that, man, this area has just grabbed onto and absolutely love. And it's just a ton of fun. The guys get to go out there and they have idiots like myself and Ben Clymer, Eric Rasmussen, Brian Lawton, guys that are former NHLers, Minnesotan guys that are helping coach Ryan Malone is out here. And, you know, we more or less just tell them, go out there and try anything you want, because in a couple of months you're going to have a coach not letting you do anything.
That's awesome. I watched a little bit of the video that everybody puts out, and it's just one of those things that, you know, if I was closer to Minnesota, I would definitely pop in and check it out, because it just seems like it's a good time and it benefits a good cause, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yep, goes to the United Heroes League. I actually think they might have picked up another charity this summer, but I'm not sure, so I'm just going to leave it with United Heroes League, which is a foundation. It used to be Defending the Blue Line. For those, Thomas Grice is heavily involved in it out there, and it's military families. It's taking care of military families and kids that either lose a parent or their parent is away serving our country, and they do everything from get them equipment, fund ice time, whatever it is, and it's just an awesome charity that we love to support. And Shane Hudella, who's just done a wonderful job with it the last 5-6 years, and it ends up raising way more money than Hank and McAlpine expected. They kind of when they first started doing it, they were going to be happy if they could get, you know, a couple $100 for the summer. For, you know, it was just a donation. It wasn't, they didn't even have a set in stone. I think this summer is like $15, and now they're given thousands of dollars by the end of the summer to the United Heroes League. It's just worked out spectacular for everybody involved.
That's a great problem to have, and like I said, it's definitely a great cause. And I've seen some of Thomas Grice's involvement with some of the other charities to that end, and it definitely benefits, you know, the servicemen and women who whose kids will benefit from the positive stuff like that. So
exactly.
Now, I saw a couple of our Islander boys out there, and Nelson and Lee. How'd they look?
Oh yeah, oh they look good. They look good. You know, they're both of them just big bodies. Those two, every single time I see them, I forget how big they are. I forget how big they are, and I'm standing there hurting my neck looking up at them. But no, they look great. It's something that, well, any offensive player, any offensive NHL player is going to have a ball. It's 4-on-4. It's a full size rink, but it's a smaller NHL size rink on the scale of things. So there's enough room where it's 4-on-4, and that's plenty. And it's just offense left and right. Defensemen are cheating, and Letty's out there even too. He's flying around out there. So yeah, it's a lot of fun seeing guys that you're used to watching battle night in and night out, all of a sudden having fun, joking around, congratulating each other, high-fiving each other. You know, there's Rangers hugging Islanders. It's weird. It's madness.
Madness. Cats and dogs playing together. To quote an amazing 80s movie.
Amen. Amen. You know, I love Bill Murray.
It's funny that you say how big these guys are, because my first memory of Brock Nelson was at his draft. Because I was up there for actually the 2008, 2009, and 2010 drafts. I was there in Ottawa, Montreal, and then Los Angeles. So I actually got to interview Brock Nelson pretty much right off the draft podium. And I have a picture of him speaking to another Minnesota boy on the phone in Kyle Oposo. And I post this picture on Twitter from time to time, especially when Brock starts to get flack from Islander fans, because you know how Islander fans can be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And to see him from this boy, this, you know, 17, 18-year-old boy, to the man he's grown into, and I say this for, like, a lot of the players that I knew, you know, right from their draft years up, you know, their AHL time and then the time up with the Islanders. It's just amazing to see the way, like, people progress, you know, and I try to go back. That's like been a theme of my podcast so far, is the people behind the athletes, because you don't really necessarily think of them in as the same person, you know. So
yep.
And that's been a pretty amazing thing. So I'm hoping for some big stuff out of Brock this year. I think he deserves it, and I want him to be a part of the Islanders moving forward, as much as that might pain some of my fellow fans out there.
And I agree with you. I think yes, I couldn't agree more. He's an awesome guy. He's one of my favorite Minnesotan guys. Anders, Nick, all those guys. I love them all. Even Kyle, my old Bloomington boy, for crying out loud. I'm hoping that this is one of those years where Brock can just relax, get a couple bounces, and then boom, just takes off. Because, yeah, I love seeing him in the blue and orange of the Islanders, and I love all the Minnesota boys out there.
There are a lot of them, that's for sure. And wasn't he Mr. Hockey in high school, if I'm not mistaken?
I believe so, yeah. And, you know, and from the small town of War Road, Minnesota, which, of course, is our hockey town, USA. Detroit, who cares? That's too big of a city, Mr. Hockey. So what does that matter? But, no, that's so him coming from War Road and coming from that small town like that, that's it's pretty special. So he's one of those guys that we hold near and dear to our heart, and we're all hoping things work out for him there on Long Island.
Not to mention he's from hockey royalty in that respect.
that too. And a lot, and then, you know, it's interesting to bring that up because a lot of people don't realize that he's got that connection.
They talk about it sometimes on the broadcast, and, you know, they talk about like the whole hockey factory and how, mm-hmm. you know, wood sticks not really part mm-hmm. of the league or even the sport really anymore. And it's kind of a shame what happened, but that's usually what happens to American corporations or even small Canadian corporations at that. So
it's tough to keep up with technology. It is. Really is. It is. And it's funny that you bring that up because I wish that every time I brought up somebody brings up like the wood sticks and everything, I would think, you know, Bufflin took forever to finally give up because, you know, he's not a war road, but Roseau, that's a huge rivalry in the state of Minnesota, those two towns. And the last guy I remember using, well, two guys I remember were Pavel Dimitra, just wouldn't get rid of his wood stick. He used Bowers and they would paint it up to make it look like the one piece. But they would only make them for him because he couldn't stand the feel of a one-piece stick. And then the only other guy was Adrian O'Coin. He couldn't do it. He couldn't do the one-piece. And, man, he tied Zdeno Chara that one year when the All-Star game was in Minnesota, playing for the Isles at 103 miles an hour or whatever it is, using a wood stick.
And I remember that.
Using all that I mean, you think about that. What if he could have found, you know, if he could have found a curve or found whatever to use the technology, he'd beat Chara. Easily. Yeah.
I remember the look on Adrian's face too. It was like, did that just happen?
Yep. I think I was the only one that wasn't surprised. I watched those things buzzing by my ears on the power play left and right. I knew he had something special with that cannon of his.
Wow. All right. Well, trip down memory lane right there. Jeez.
Ah, I love it. Well, what else do I have for crying out loud? It's my kid's life. I live vicariously through now. And 8-year-olds, love them to death. It's just not quite as exciting as NHLers just yet. Don't tell them I said that.
I won't. That's our little secret.
All right, good. As long as it's our little secret.
So now for the main part of really why I wanted to speak, you know, thank you again for coming on. And thank you for earlier this summer for, you know, joining me for that little three-piece thing I put together on the Tavares situation. So
absolutely, yes, that's it almost still seems like it's ongoing.
It is, you know. Elliot Friedman today put something out on Sportsnet that was actually a good read, as much as I don't really want to admit that, but everything he does pretty much is awesome. And it revisits painful things from time to time when stuff like this pops up. So I mean, mm-hmm. it is what it is. It's going to be a narrative up until the first time the Islanders play Toronto. And what are you going to do?
It's the first time in New York. The fans, it's just the way it is. And there are certain fans. It's kind of like politics. There's fans that see it on two different sides. But the ones with anger are the ones that need to just get it out. They want to burn the jerseys. They want to make this big scene of it. They just need to get it out of them, and then we can all move on.
I don't think all of us will move on, but that's a story for another day.
That's true. Hopefully the sane ones, although the Fanatics are my kind of favorite. So
I'm still reeling from them moving you out off Long Island. So, you know, that was a long time ago.
Oh, thank you. It was, I still look back on it from time to time a little frustrated myself, so don't feel bad.
Well, we have Milbury to blame for that, though, correct?
That's right. Thinking Milbury.
Now, if you watch on NBC, do you get frustrated at him sometimes?
You know, oddly enough, you're the first one to ask me this. In an interview. Not nearly as much as my wife, though.
We should all get frustrated with him at times.
Yeah. You know, and I don't dislike the guy. He is what he is. He's a bit of a goofball, kind of, you know, whatever. He kind of goes off in his tangents that sometimes make sense. But yeah, oh my Lord, my wife gets so mad.
So you hear that, Islanders fans? It's not just players and former players who get mad at former people in their hockey career lives. It's the wives of NHLers as well. So remember that.
That's right. That's right. We all have hearts, and the women care more deeply than we do at times.
All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the way things have changed for the New York Islanders, your former club, and, you know, Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz and Lane Lambert and his other associate coaches that have since come on, especially the goalie whisperer. What do you think that's going to do? What do you think that's going to do for the club here moving forward, especially in the first couple weeks of the season?
Well, it's a little hard, obviously, for me because my heart, Snowy being one of my good friends, one of my favorite teammates, Dougie Wade, a lot of those guys there that were part of it. Obviously, I was pulling for huge. I wanted them to have success. I wanted them to build a dynasty and everything. And the fact of the matter is, it's really, really, really hard to do that. And, you know, you make one decision, it snowballs into another. And that being said, if I take my personal feelings away from it, I like the move. You know, the organization, they had time, they had their opportunities, and now I think it was kind of good timing with the whole with how Tavares worked out. Not blaming anyone. I personally, as a player, as a former player, I appreciate and respect how Garth handled it. He trusted John. I respect the way he handled it, where he didn't pull a trigger. And now, of course, looking back on it, didn't work out. But now that it's moved on, I mean, how can you do better than pulling in a guy like Lou Lamoriello, who wins three cups in with New Jersey? You bring in a coach that just won a Stanley Cup with Barry Trotz. You bring in one of the smartest hockey minds of all time as an advisor with Jacques Lemaire. It's hard for me as a former Islander to not get excited at the prospect of what these guys are going to do. And I think a lot of people, it takes time. So just because they were hired and then they just got hired this offseason, they only have a few months. There's only so many things you can really do in just a couple of months as a general manager, as an organization, to change the group as a whole. You don't really want to completely flip it upside down, because then what happens to the guys? Are you going to throw off Barzal? You're going to throw off Lee? You're going to throw off these guys that had big years? You still need to ride that wave, as well as bringing in your own fingerprint, bringing in the style of hockey that you want to play. And then that starts with, and the easiest part is, the bottom six. And bringing in guys, character guys, that can start to change the attitude, start to change the mentality. The skilled guys, the top guys, well, those are harder to, they're harder to come by. Without sounding like a total prick, they're just harder to come by. So I like the moves that they've made. And I don't know how you can top the group of guys that they brought in to, unfortunately, replace all my good friends.
You know, that it's funny. I didn't even really take into account, you know, the reaction that you would have to that question in, you know, the friendliness you have towards Snow and Wade. And I'm not saying at all that they're bad guys. Garth Snow.
No.
I know. Was the absolute nicest person to me, like covering the team, that I ever mm-hmm. could have asked for. He would always make sure that I was getting everything I needed, and
yep.
We actually had a couple of little stupid jokes, and he would always ask me my face-off percentage, and, you know, well, we always could use, like, a, you know, another center, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you know, all right, well,
yeah.
I might not be the best person for the job, but I'll do my best.
he's a great, that's what's hard. It's to differentiate the person from the job, and
right.
that's professional sports. That's where a guy like Garth or whoever has been around long enough, you have to realize that you can't take it personal. If you take it personal, you're screwed. You're just not going to make it long in pro sports if you
right.
take anything personal. You got to realize there's a separation there. And yeah, Garth's, what I'm telling you, one of my favorites. He saved my ass so many times. I absolutely hated it when I was on the far boards and I wasn't next to the bench when he was backing up. I knew he would talk. He walked me through so many plays. If somebody was getting hit, I'll never forget in Tampa in the playoffs. And Garth, so when he was backing up, like I was almost relaxed going to the wall. Like I didn't even feel like I had to turn around and look at the defenseman. I didn't have to see what was coming at me. And sure enough, I get the puck kind of in my feet, and I kind of hear a heads up, but it wasn't Snowy's voice. And all I turned around and I saw was just a Tampa Bay Lightning symbol, like just right in the nose. My face, I had like scabs on the right side of my face. Well, it was Chris Dingman, who luckily at least was nice enough to not absolutely kill me because I was buddies with him, but he absolutely ran me over. I had no idea he was there, nothing. I was right along the bench in Tampa. I came off the ice and I started yelling at Snowy. Snowy, God dang it, what the? Are you kidding me? Like, where were you on that one? And he looks at me and shrugs while he's eating a Snickers bar. I couldn't even be mad at him. I just started laughing as my face is bleeding because Damon ran me over.
Did he give you a piece at least?
You know, as a backup goalie, you can get away with certain things on the bench. I don't know if I could have gotten away with that in front of Laviolette.
Wow.
I'll never forget. Just looking, I was just cursing him out, yelling at Snowy, where were you on that one? And just, he's hungry. Had a snack.
Dude, my mouth was full.
Yeah, literally.
Dingman told you, heads up, you should have listened.
He did. Well, he did. Look, and I'm glad he did. Like, and he could have, it could have easily been his shoulder, and he could have put me in La La Land. I'd have been out for the series. So, and that, I think that's another thing that some people would be surprised at, is there, as much as it's scary, some of the respect for player to player that's going on in the game, there still is that respect for certain guys. Like, there, and I shouldn't say like that, like I'm something special, but there's certain guys that still have that respect where they know they got to come and jump and do. Like, Dingman had to hit me. If he didn't hit me, he's not playing the rest of that playoff series. Tortorella, no way Tortorella's playing that guy, playing Dinger, if he doesn't hit me that. But doesn't do it. He more or less just lets me, he more or less let me run into him, and it still hurt like hell.
You know, and it's fortunate that it was Tampa and not Toronto with what happened to Janssen and Pekka.
Oh, if that was Gary Roberts, I'd still be in La La Land.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still that team against Toronto, if that wouldn't have happened, I think you guys definitely could have pulled out a win, especially after that Bates penalty shot. My God.
Oh, we trust me. As you said that, the hair on the back of my neck stood up. We, oh man, that when Tucker submarine Pekka, it was one of those moments where how could it not be suspended? If you're telling me that's not intentional. Oh, whoa, easy. No, like that was, and that's why they made it a suspension. That's why they made it, you know, they cracked down on it the very next year. Yeah, they knew we had a legit chance, and then they go on to play two more series. Oh, that was – it's funny because we're so angry about it. The guys I talked to, Batesy and Scatchard and Weimer, all these guys, all of us that were part of that series, Snowy, Ricky. Just to put it in perspective, I guess, I didn't realize we don't look at it as such this great series that everybody else talks about. I just did some work out in the NHL Network. Mike Johnson. So this is 2018. The first question he asked me, what was that series like in Toronto in 2002? This is a first round series,
right,
in the playoffs. Well, who cares? You know, like we lost on the first round. So to us, it's us Islanders went through. Like, it's like heartbreaking. We just kind of put it out of our head. And now getting older, the one good thing about getting older was that I'm starting to appreciate that series more. With how many people bring it up and ask me questions about that series, because I didn't look at it as a great series. Like, screw that. We lost in 7 to Toronto. How can that be a good series? We lost. We were done. And now for people to bring it up and how memorable it was, and not just New York Islanders with Basie's penalty shot and you know, the turnaround, because it was years of just hell, more or less, on Long Island. Now we're kind of starting to appreciate more, I guess, that season as a team, because we wanted more. We expected way more. We really thought we had a shot at, well, doing what Laviolette did with Carolina a couple years later. Honestly, we thought we were that team that Carolina was a couple years later. We really thought we had a shot. It's just frustrating to know that we went down in one round. Damn it.
It was amazing to be in the building as a fan. I'll tell you that. That was one of the loudest things I've ever experienced. I mean, later on, you know, I would experience a couple of other occasions, and but that was just, it was an amazing thing. And Toronto fans were there, and we felt them because they drove down, and it was just, it was awesome. Hockey was back on Long Island, and it was so close to 9/11 that, you know, it was just like a great thing. And
there was so much passion and just, it was just an amazing year. Just had the interview the other day, and I was talking about it, and it's almost, it's hard to put an emotion or a finger on it. Like, that year was, it was just special. Like, for some reason, some years go well and some years don't. You can't really put a finger on it, but there was just something special. There was a buzz around Long Island, in New York, around the team, the locker room. Oh, even when we were away from the locker room, we did everything together, the team. It was just, it was different. I don't want to say different anymore now that I've gotten a chance to look back. It was special. I love it. It was the absolute most fun I ever had as a hockey player that year.
Wow. That's huge. I don't even know how to react to that.
Yeah, that's the only way I can put it. I don't know how else to put it into words. It was, we just had a ball as a group. We were all passionate. We would get on each other. We all held each other accountable, but it was all, we knew it was all out of love and respect. Nobody hated, like, it was, there was just something special about the year. And that's why when we get together, when I talk to these guys, Sketch and these guys, it's why it's kind of heartbreaking. Cause, like, damn it. Like, we could have had one of those years.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's the best thing about hockey is, you know, there's a Cinderella story almost every single season.
Right.
Last year was Las Vegas, and not how as a hockey fan could you not, like, just be all in on that? Like, here's a team of cast-offs, essentially, and they made it all the way to the Stanley Cup final.
By just flat out destroying everyone too.
Right.
I mean, I do a radio show out here in Minnesota. I'm on a few times a week, and the entire playoffs. Oh, this is where it runs. They're running to L.A. It's battle-worn, won Stanley Cups. They don't stand a chance. Swept them.
Yeah.
Wow, San Jose. Oh, no chance. San Jose is big, tough, and rough. Five or six? Like, in Winnipeg, not a chance. Bufflin's flying. Hellebuck's having too good. It was finally by the finals. When they were asking me about it, I'm like, I'm done. Vegas is winning. And, of course, then freaking Washington wins. Like, after I finally gave up that they were going to just, like, screw it, nobody's taking these guys down, then this Cinderella story finally ends. But it was so great for hockey. I did the Islanders game in Vegas, and I was kind of wandering around and talking to players to fans about Vegas and just, like, you know, where you're from, how this, they turned original six fans into Vegas fans. Ranger, Toronto, Montreal, that doesn't happen. If you're an original six fan, you're a lifer. You bleed those colors. And yet these guys are showing me, I had a guy that showed me a Toronto Maple Leaf tattoo who's wearing a Golden Vegas Knight jersey. What? I didn't even know what to say to that. Like, that's incredible for how amazing, how good that was for hockey is awesome.
And now
awesome.
And now it appears like, you know, we're going to get another one out west in Seattle too. So,
and how much you've got to assume some of that lies with the success of Vegas.
Has to.
I mean, how excited is Seattle? Because, oh my God, if Vegas can do it in 1 year, why can't we?
You know what though? Seattle is a sports city. So it's going to be.
Sorry, go ahead.
Going to be even better in that end, you know, because they have, the basketball team moved, right? Or they're moving back.
Yeah. Let me think about this. Because I played a year for Seattle in the Western League, and I absolutely loved it. One of my favorite cities I've been to. Not even close to the food in New York, but it's a great city. And they supported the Thunderbirds. Like, it was great. We had played at the Key Arena with the Sonics. Oh, Oklahoma City.
Okay. Yep, that's right.
Oklahoma City.
I'm not a big basketball guy, so I would have had to Google it.
The only reason I know that was because I was in Seattle, and it just, for some reason, it stuck. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I don't know. That game, basketball's, that would just frustrate me.
All right. I'm going to backtrack a little bit to something you said prior to this amazing offshoot tangent that we just went through, because that was just amazing.
I'm good at those, just so you know.
So you brought up the bottom six and mm-hmm. character guys, and I've been having arguments with people on Twitter about this from the get-go. Oh, you know, I can't believe that they gave Komarov a four-year deal, you know, Kunackel, Filppula, you know. All these guys are heart and soul guys. Mm-hmm. They are character guys who have won in certain instances, and number two, have all worn a letter on their sweater at some point during their careers. So like you said, what's the quickest fix to instill that work ethic that the Islanders, you know, I'm not going to shoot them down to that end. You know, they've been workhorses for the most part in certain areas. But this is the way that a new general manager can come in, and they're going to show all of the younger guys and some of the guys who maybe haven't had, you know, the best leadership over their careers of, this is the way that you're a pro. This is the way mm-hmm. that we're going to go out there, and we're going to skate through the boards in order to try to get that win for our organization or our coach or ourselves. So, yep. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Am I happy with a four-year deal for Komarov? No, but I know the type of player he is, and I know what he's going to bring. And the other guys, you know, they're going to be here for their short time. They're going to serve their purpose, and they're going to move on. So.
Yep. And it's one of the few, maybe the only way that a GM coming in has a couple months that can change the identity of a team. Like you said, the they've worn letters, they've been there, they've done that. And a lot of times, how can I say this without being disrespectful to the skill guys? I mean, those guys, their careers can depend more on winning and losing. That's the character that's they bring in. They're more apt to hold the skill guys accountable as opposed to the vice versa. Because the skill guys, and then like I said, it kind of sounds mean. I don't mean it to sound this way. I hope this comes across the right way. But the skill guys necessarily sometimes are kind of more worried about, well, I got to do my job. My job is to score goals. My job is to put up points. My job is to do this. Those character guys, that's not their job. They have to provide the character. They've got to set the tone. They set the physicality. They set the mood in the room. They're more apt to hold the superstars accountable. The superstars are usually kind of off in their own little world. And, you know, if they kind of get lost in it, more often than not, that what I've seen in a locker room is the third or fourth liner going, hey, wakey, wakey, you're going to be part of this here or what? Like, we're trying to build something. So that's why I really like those moves. Yeah, they're not groundbreaking. No, they weren't front page news. But that's how you slowly turn the identity of an organization around. And then you wait until one of the big boys, a superstar, well, those don't come along every day, but some kind of star or top, let's just say top six, opens up that you know, that Lou knows will fill that identity role, and then boom, then you jump on.
Cough, cough, Artemi Panarin.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, you know, I like how they brought Matt Martin in because he's a fan favorite. He's a Long Island guy. I believe he actually, because I live all the way out on the east end of Long Island in East Hampton, so I'm pretty sure that him and Sydney own a house somewhere out here. I'm not sure exactly where. So, I mean, he's a Long Island guy through and through. He even stayed on Long Island when he got traded to Toronto in the offseason.
Yeah.
But I love how they reunited that, as Don Cherry says, best fourth line in hockey. And I love how they're going out there and they're basically going to start the game with energy. They're going to go out there. They're going to hit. They're going to set the tone, like you said. And that's an important thing, because you have guys, the skilled guys, who might not go out there and show the same type of energy. But when that energy line goes out there and they set the tone, everybody else is going to rise up to that level. And that's exactly how you win hockey games, essentially.
Right. Especially when your core talent group is young and influential. And that is exactly what the Islanders have right now. Yeah, minus a couple. Lee, Brock, maybe they're not young. But at the same time, you know, Barzell, Bovo, you know, you got to imagine Josh Hosang, Kiefer Bellows, these guys are going to get shots. There you go. Like, they're looking for somebody to follow. They're not leaders yet. They're looking for something like that. Like, holy shit, if the fourth liners go out there and work this hard, I better bust my ass. You know, especially the older guys, the leaders that have been around. And that's why I love the moves.
Yeah, and then you take it a step further and you look to see what they insulated those kids down in Bridgeport with, you know, the career AHLers, but they're all grizzled vets, and I'm not trying to put them down like you were either, you know, but you have these guys who have carved out careers by playing hard in the AHL.
Heart and soul.
And it's the same thing that he's done down there in very short order. And I think a lot has to do with, you know, Lou obviously knowing his son, because Chris Lamorello is essentially in charge of Bridgeport. So, but, you know, you have the whole entire organization turning around and turning a new page in that. So, like, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens there. And like you said, you know, it's only a matter of time before before Mark finishes getting his drink.
What are you talking about?
Just ice. But yeah, so it's only a matter of time before things start to improve there as well. So
yeah, now, no, I couldn't agree more. I apologize for being distracting. Yeah,
it's all right.
I couldn't agree more. And that's all part of it. That's building an identity. That's building an organization. You see it. There are very few teams that can, for somehow, and I don't know how they get away with not having a strong American. Like that's how you build your core. You build your group. You start down there. You teach them how to win. You teach them. You put them in front of the right people. You bring in the right coaches. You bring in the right veterans, and that you grow from there. So in hopes that in the NHL, then they're just, that's how they are. So then you don't have to, you know, necessarily bring in a ton of guys to just lead the way. But if you're going to be successful, if you're going to win a Stanley Cup, you better have 20 captains on your team.
Yeah, I mean, and unfortunately this year, there's not going to be a captain on paper. But again, like you said, there could be 20 captains in the room because there are a bunch of character guys now there. And, you know, there's not going to be a captain that's going to lead by example like they had in John Tavares. There's going to be a captain who's going to stand up and one will rise to the surface, obviously, because I know how it works.
That's what I like about it.
So we'll see what happens there, too. But, I mean, what do you think about some of the young kids also that you brought up briefly in Bellows and Dobson and Bodie Wild, if you're familiar with some of them, who they drafted over this summer?
They're exciting. I mean, they're good hockey players. They're great hockey players. And a lot of it is surrounding them with a group of older guys. I can guarantee you, I would not have had the success in Florida, or I shouldn't say that, just not have had the success in the NHL period, had I not had Dino Cicerelli, Scott Mellenby, Sean Burke, Johan Garpenlof, Ray Whitney, Brett Hedekin. I had a group of older guys surrounding me in Florida that drug me along with them. Now, granted, a couple of them were still in the olden golden days where it was, you just go have 6-7 beers after practice every day, which maybe wasn't the best thing. But the way they carried themselves, the way they got in, no matter what happened the night before, you're the first one, you're getting on the bike, you're getting on the ice, you're working on the game. Now, Dino Cicerelli had 600 goals, and he was still working on goal scoring after practice. And he forced me to sit out there with him. Well, I mean, I wasn't going to say no, but at the same time, if he grabs you, he's like, come on, kid, let's go work on some stuff. And so all that just builds into a community, builds into that identity, the character that you're looking for. And that's what's exciting about bringing those guys in that maybe people don't realize, you know, this bottom six, whatever. But if you can get those kids with this talent pool that they have now to get their work ethic, the sky's the limit. I mean, obviously, we all know what Barzal can do. I think Beauvillier and Barzal still have a step. Like they still have some once they start to build even more chemistry than what they have, they could be terrifying as a 1-2 combo. Just put anybody with them. Who cares? Right. Like, just let those two play.
You know, the best part about, I think, that duo is that they were friends prior to their time on the island. And you can't teach chemistry like that, obviously. No. That stuff happens.
Just happens.
And, yep. And magic happens sometimes too, especially when you're comfortable with someone. I mean, I've said this pretty much to every single person that I've had on. I've played hockey my whole life. I still play. And now I might not have played at nearly the level that all you guys have played at, but it's the same game. And it's the same experiences. And sometimes you come across that one guy where it's like you guys live inside each other's heads and you just know where they're going to be on the ice. You know what the next move is going to be. You know to have your stick in a certain spot because that pass somehow is going to wind up coming through all sorts of bodies and legs and everything. And it's fun to watch with those two. And I'm hoping that they're going to be on the Islanders for the long term to come in the future.
It was it reminds me, those two remind me of myself, Pekka, and Bates.
The Lucky Seven line.
Yeah, we asked Laviolette about that. Kind of like, where did you see this? Did you have a feeling? Did you have an inkling? And no, not at all. He just, his thought was, well, let's put two really good defensive guys with Perry because he's not going to do a damn thing in his end.
Yeah.
And it worked out. Like, we just instantly clicked. He said the same thing from the first practice. You could just see it. Pecks just got traded. I didn't even know who Sean Bates was. Don't tell him I said that. From the American League in Boston. I had no clue. And we just clicked. And instantly, Batesy and I are roommates. You know, Pecka, we're all, you know, just, it's a goofy, weird thing, chemistry, because you don't, maybe you don't see it at first. I mean, why would you put three righties together, for crying out loud, as your second line? It just, but you know, the smart coaches, the smart hockey minds, once they can kind of see that click, ride that wave, because it just doesn't come along every day.
You know, it's funny you bring that up about Bates, because I feel like if there was a comparable person to Barzal, it would be Bates in certain areas. I mean, he. Obviously, Barzal is a much better skater than him, but, you know.
Barzal's kind of a much better skater than way more people. He is a spectacular skater, but he is so relaxed. He's kind of got that Patrick Marleau kind of just ho-hum look to him that people don't realize how fast he's going.
Right. It would be like Blake to that end too, because he was so fast. I don't think a lot of people gave him enough credit for the amount of speed that he had when he was out there.
So quick, stop and go. He was like Barry Sanders on ice. Like, he could be, okay, that might have been an extreme because whatever, but my point is he could go from stopped to full speed in 2-3 strides, like just gone. That was Jason Blake. I mean, he just, and he never got tired. God, it was irritating playing with him because he just never got tired. At some point, don't you need some oxygen?
I need oxygen right now, and I'm just talking. Actually, I have a game on Saturday night, and I haven't played the whole summer because, like I said, I live so far away from the rink that it's during the summer it takes me 3 hours. It's like an hour and a half drive, but with traffic, the East End traffic, it's just insane. So I take the summer off. But you know what? Adrenaline is going to get me going from the puck drop to, like, you know, maybe right after my first shift, and then my second shift is just going to be terrible.
It takes a couple. You want to force, and this is the one trick that I have, that when it's been a few months, which it usually is between skating, you kind of got to force the lungs to open up a little bit. You got to go out there and push yourself for a couple of shifts, and then the lungs will open up a little bit, and then it doesn't feel as painful.
Let's just tell that to my knees. Maybe they don't get the note.
You're on your own on those. Once knees go, they go.
Well, I am an air conditioning guy by trade, so crawling around in too many attics over my 18 years. So
wear and tear.
Anyway, back to hockey. So we talked a little bit about, you know, some of the stuff that they have changed, and what do you think about the arena situation? And I know you have some great memories at the Coliseum, and, you know, we're going to be playing there for parts of the next three seasons as well. And there's some rumors about potentially moving in full time for the final two before Belmont. I reached out to Jim Baumbach an episode or two ago. We caught up on some of the Belmont news and everything, and he writes for Newsday. I had asked him that because I had heard that through a couple of people, but he had not. So, you know, let us know what you think about Belmont and the potential of coming back to Long Island full time.
I am incredibly excited about it. Brooklyn's cool. It's nice and everything, but that's not where the Islanders belong. It's just not where the Islanders belong. I'm very happy. I mean, I brought my family up. My kids had no clue. They had no idea where mommy and daddy were dragging them to bring them out to the last game on the Coliseum. And we went and watched that game because how near and dear it was to me in that building. And I mean, the noise, the people, it's a special building. Is it a nice building? No. The fans, let alone the players, for one of the most storied organizations in the NHL deserve a building that they should be proud of. Bottom line, with what to me, hey, once Pittsburgh got rid of that god-awful Igloo Civic Arena, I mean, next in line was time to upgrade the Coliseum. So I'm very happy that they're going back to Long Island. They're going to get on Belmont. And I love the fact that they're going back and playing some more games in the Coliseum. It wasn't pretty, but there were ghosts in that building. There was an aura in that building. Everybody has seen the highlights of the dynasty, Trotz, Nystrom, Potvin, Tonelli. I mean, you name it. Everybody remembers those scenes. And just to be in that building is special. It brings back history. That being said, I'm very excited that Belmont's getting a brand new rink, because if there's ever a fan base in the NHL that deserves a rink and an arena to be proud of, it is the Islander faithful.
Yes. Yes,
right?
We do.
I just, there's nobody else even compares. Heck, everybody else has a new arena.
Yeah. I mean, the Rangers don't.
Yeah, but that's MSG. That's different. I don't see the Rangers ever going anywhere.
You know, but there are rumors to that end, and I know that they did a whole bunch of renovations a couple of years ago, and the place is beautiful now. I mean, it definitely needed an upgrade, and it got an upgrade. But
yeah,
you know, there's like the whole thing with them wanting to move Penn Station, and they is the MTA in New York City, and that could potentially have some implications for Madison Square Garden, the most storied building in the entire league, or the world,
yeah,
really. The most famous arena, right, it's called? So.
Right, yeah. Well, I guess the tone was set when the Maple Leafs left the Garden and Montreal left the Forum.
And Detroit left the Joe.
Yeah. What a dump, but an awesome place to play.
Of all the buildings that I really wanted to get a chance to go to, and I tried like heck to get there last year or the year before, you know, excuse me.
Yeah.
Was the Joe. I, you know, my cousin.
Great little rink. Great little rink.
My cousin Chris, who has been asking me to mention him on the podcast for weeks now.
You're welcome, Chris.
Yes. Is a wrestling coach, and he would have to go to Detroit for wrestling tournaments all the time. And he went up there and he was like, the place was cool, but it was like in the middle of nowhere. Like there was nothing to do. So,
I remember walking to the rink and passing multiple homeless people. You kind of feel sick to your stomach getting to the rink. Once you get inside and this whole feeling, you can just feel Gordy skating around or hanging out in there. It's just this tiny little rink. The people are right on top of you. There's not much for suites. It felt like old time hockey. Hmm. You know, it just felt that way. And it was awesome. It had a great feel to it. But again, it was a dump.
So is the Coliseum.
So is the Coliseum.
I played at the Coliseum a couple of times in high school, and you know, it was definitely weird, you know, coming from a non-professional point of view to look around and see a small, large building. But it was still definitely cool to play, especially on the same ice that, you know, those great cup-winning teams played on. And being someone who grew up on Long Island and I'm a lifelong Islander fan, it was special. And I mean, I'll always have an attachment and a soft spot for the building, obviously. So,
Oh, I for sure. Ever since Batesy scored that, well, before then, obviously, just growing up and Bossy, Trotz. I mean, all the highlights you've seen from that building. But for me personally, it was Batesy's penalty shot goal. Man, I've never heard a building so loud in my life. I've never heard Laviolette was yelling at the guys to get out there to take the face off, and nobody could hear him. So he literally had to come by. He pushed the guys in the back to go take the face off because we couldn't, on the bench, he was yelling at us behind us to get on the ice. We couldn't hear him. That was how loud it was. The floor was shaking. It was incredible. I've never, again, hair on the back of my neck stood up.
You know, Barry Trotz said something similar in one of his first interviews as Islanders head coach, you know, was asked about playing at the Coliseum, and he said, you know, that series against the Islanders that the Caps wound up winning game seven. Well, we won game six to force game seven in it was like the last year at the Coliseum. He said the same thing. He had never heard a building as loud as it was then. The fans were on top of you. He said you could feel them breathing on you.
The atmosphere was
crazy.
Yeah, it's true. It was insane. I've never been in a hockey rink where two things happen. The bench is literally shaking. I mean, you could feel it shaking under your feet. And the coach was yelling at us to go out, and we didn't know he was even talking. How does that happen? He's screaming right behind our head. Now, when my kids are screaming behind my head, I hear them.
Especially at night when they're not in bed.
Oh, good Lord.
So you mentioned Brian Trottier a couple of times. And
yeah.
Do you think it's an omen of sorts that we lovingly call him Trotz, and now we have a coach who has the same initials, and his name is Barry Trotz?
That didn't cross my mind at all, but I love it. It's got to be.
Just popped into my head.
The greatest Islander of all time. And all of a sudden, I mean, come on. If there is a God, this is an omen.
Well, there are hockey gods, let me tell you that.
There we go. Oh, yes, there are. Oh, yes, there are.
Well, hopefully they'll be shining some light on our New York Islanders here moving forward. And, you know, better times are ahead, that's for sure.
I agree. Yeah, it's an organization, and it's one of the one thing that I've loved. My brother even brought it up to me when I was playing. There are a few fan bases that are almost generational, but yet they don't forget the generation before them. So you can almost tell where fans grew up by what jersey they're wearing, but the greats never go away. Kind of makes any sense. You'll see a Parrish and a Cairns and a Webb jersey next to a Trotche Nystrom Potvin or Bossy. You know, you don't see the eclectic generational fan base most other places. Most other places you go, everybody just wants the new young hot item. They want whoever the big deal is. Long Island is very different, and that's one of the things I absolutely have always loved about New Yorkers is, yeah, you're going to have to work to earn their respect. But once you have their respect, you have it for life. And I've got absolutely nothing but respect for that, not to sound redundant. I think it's incredible the way that Islanders fans refuse to forget the past. It's awesome.
You know, and it's funny. I think because the organization as a whole isn't terribly old. So you have people who became fans essentially because there was a team in their backyard. They're quite literally their backyard. My uncle and I were season ticket holders for 6 or 7 years. He lived across the street in Uniondale, so I would park in his driveway. And we would walk to the Coliseum. Right. It was like a 7-minute walk.
Yeah.
He grew up a Ranger fan. But he said, how could I have possibly continued to be a Ranger fan when there was literally a team in my backyard to root for? You know? And
right.
he obviously started to go to a lot of games, and because it was easier to get to than the city. And he said, you know, in a couple of years into their existence, they were good. They were damn good. They were a dynasty, you know, and not a lot of people can say that, you know. Oiler fans is a close second. You know, Montreal obviously is another storied franchise, but they're an original six team. So, I mean, yeah,
you got to take that out of the equation.
It's different, you know?
Mm-hmm. Think about an up and coming franchise that just came in and just owned the NHL. Owned it. And that's incredible. Like you said, especially not original six.
And then you have the Islanders and the Oilers essentially going back and forth, and just it was a perennial Stanley Cup final.
How close was it to five in a row?
Very.
Right? I mean, that's insane.
And then you go to 93, you know, and that's another year that they could have won had an injury not happened.
Yeah, I was going to say, most Islander fans don't like to talk about that year.
That's because I'm not going to bring up any names. Dale Hunter. Dale Hunter.
There's just something special about hockey and Long Island. It's hard to put a finger on it. It's hard to define it. It's a mutual love affair for those of us that get to play hockey on Long Island and truly get a chance to entrench yourselves in the history, the fan base, the passion, the desire, the want to win. It's almost equal with the players and the fan base, which usually you don't usually it's the players. Yeah, the fan base is kind of want to win, but not with the passion with that Long Island fans have.
You know, and it's a shame because you see like another thing today on Deadspin, some writer, I don't know who the heck she is. The title of the article was Best to Islanders. The Islanders, obviously, in their view, being the worst. And it's year after year where they do not get any respect. And as a fan and as someone who cares deeply about the franchise and has experienced great things, you know, personally, it's not hurtful. I mean, it is what it is. But at the same time, it's like when can you get the respect as an organization? And, you know, I understand respect is earned. I even said that today on Twitter. But, you know, like as someone who has a soft spot for the franchise and who's someone who's played for this franchise, you know, how does that make you feel?
Mad. To say something like that is that to know that you don't know the people that are involved. You clearly don't get it. I don't know how to put it. Clearly you haven't talked to the right people. You have not spoken to the right people, not interviewed guys that have been in there, been involved, been entrenched with it. Not just guys that have been there for a couple of months or for a season, but guys that have actually gotten a chance to live on Long Island, see the passion, see how much fans care. My first year when I came in, I loved being able to see this transition. I don't blame the fans at all. It was the first year we came in, we were 30th out of 30, for crying out loud. I'm actually pretty positive we were in 2000, 2001. And it was miserable. We knew, I mean, good God, we were like mathematically eliminated in like February or something. I mean, it was embarrassingly bad. I wouldn't have come up and watched us either. But then that next year, good God, it was incredible. I mean, people came out of the woodwork. I remember being in the locker room and talking about it, like, where did all these fans, we're going to do events and there's thousands of people as opposed to 100. It blew us all away, the support that just instantly came back, just drop of a hat, just boom, all of a sudden these people were there. And that's when I realized that this fan base does not get the respect it deserves in the NHL. That's when I realized it. That 2001-2002 year, it blew us all away. I mean, it just instantly people came back.
Do you tell other people that you've played with or just friends with who've played, you know, that the preconceived notions of the Islanders are just false, that it's
100%. 100%. And the worst part is it kind of, for a while, when you're an opposing team, you come in, you see the Marriott, you see the Coliseum, that was it. And I don't mean to be rude to Uniondale, love Hofstra University or anything, but it's not exactly the nicest part of Long Island.
No.
Is that fair enough?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean,
leave it that way.
It's better now than it was even 10 years ago.
Which is awesome.
But you know,
you get away from that. It's gorgeous.
Yes.
It's gorgeous. The restaurants, the people, the places. So that's I think that's part of what feeds into it too, is these opposing players, as myself in Florida, like you go in, there's the Marriott, you walk across to the Coliseum, that's it. You don't see anything else. So you don't get to really entrench yourself. You don't get to, you know, it's not like playing the, it's just, since it's right down the street. So it's not like playing the Rangers and all of a sudden like, oh, where are we going to go to Manhattan? You know, you kind of can pick your spots for restaurants. Guys can go to shows if they want to, Broadway shows the night before, you know, bigger cities like that. So you don't get to, you don't really get to live or really give yourself an opportunity to see what life is like on Long Island. I was lucky enough to give it, you know, I got time. It's amazing. It's amazing. My wife and I still talk about how awesome it would have been to raise our kids up.
We're all definitely fortunate, especially, you know, like I mentioned earlier, where I live, you know, and I grew up in Nassau County. I grew up, you know, basically 15 traffic lights from the Coliseum. So
yeah,
in Bethpage, you know, great golf. And now I live, like I said, in East Hampton, and also great golf, great beaches, great shopping, great restaurants. You know, I'm a little insulated in where I am compared to the rest of the island, but you know, I don't like the team. I don't think it really gets the respect or even the acknowledgement of how great of a place it is to live.
And it's unfortunate, but until the organization, the team can make a run and really starts to, you know, get that town, that the Long Island, get the team, get everything around there under the microscope again, I have a horrible feeling that it's going to be. And it's unfortunate. It's too bad because it's a spectacular place to live. Most of my best friends, not just on the ice as players, but friends, just still on Long Island. I still talk to them more than anybody else I talk to. And I played in my hometown, for crying out loud.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hey, listen, I think that's the end goal. You bring in a guy like Lamoriello and Trotz, and you want to use all their experience as cup-winning GMs and coaches. And
yep,
the goal is to build a perennial winner here on Long Island. And I'm sure that everything will change then. And you know, it's just a shame Tavares left now, because it was seemed like the organization was turning a corner, and now you have the same people coming out and saying, oh, Tavares left because it's terrible on Long Island.
Yep, exactly, and which is so unfair. It's just unfair.
All right, well, Mark, we're at an hour and 2 minutes here, and I
know
you. Yeah. I mean, I can continue to talk all night because you're just that type of guy. And you know.
Thank you. I probably should go get my kids, I suppose, they're at camp. I should be a dad now.
Yeah. Mine are with my in-laws. And like I said, my wife is away for business, so I have the house to myself to do podcast stuff tonight.
Oh, see, now that's the difference between you and I. If I got the house to myself and it's quiet, it's night-night time. I'm sleeping.
Well, I'm going to order myself some dinner, I think, and watch the Yankee game. So
Now there's the New Yorker I miss right there.
All right, bud, but seriously, I appreciate it. And hopefully, you know, are we going to see you on MSG this year?
I hope so. I know I spoke with them a little bit. They brought in, I don't want them, AJ. I know they're trying to work it out with her, but at the same time, they still want to fill in with other dates. And last year I didn't even really speak with him about any dates until late October, so I'm not too concerned about it. So yeah, I hope so. I thoroughly enjoy it. I really love it.
You are definitely
way more fun doing that than anything else.
You're a natural, dude, and you know, I it's one of those things that you made an enjoyable broadcast that much more enjoyable because your enthusiasm for hockey and the Islanders and everything else just comes out so awesome. And like I said, you're just a great guy. You happen to be one of my favorite players.
Oh, thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate it. I do enjoy it. I'm glad that comes out because I did. I thoroughly enjoyed working with him again and being part of the pesky Isles again.
There you go. Back to your roots, sense.
That's right.
But again, thank you for coming on, and hopefully at some point maybe we can have you on again in the future. It would be great to catch up with you about some hockey again.
Absolutely. You let me know. I'll come on anytime, buddy.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Before we wrap up, I just wanted to briefly talk about Anders Lee and him being named captain of the New York Islanders today. Couldn't think of a better guy for the Islanders to be led by. He's one of those guys that'll do anything for the team, do anything he possibly can to get the puck in the net. And as you heard Mark and I talk about, coincidentally, we felt like he would be a really great leader. And, you know, it's like the hockey gods heard us, like we said. So congrats to Anders. And, you know, we will see what happens tonight down in Carolina. We'll talk about it hopefully tomorrow. Before we get into the weekend of games here, and we'll see you in episode 10. I also wanted to take a quick moment to welcome back to the podcast world Mike Carver of the Isle Seat Podcast. It's been a rough summer for you, Mike. I'm glad that you decided to stick it out and try this thing solo. I'll be looking forward to seeing what you guys put out over there at the Isle Seat. And if you need anything from me, just give me a shout, man, anytime. Good luck. Again, this has been the Isles Faithful Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Sherline. Follow us on Twitter, Faithful Isles. Follow us on Instagram, Isles Faithful. Follow us on Facebook, The Isles Faithful. And you can follow my personal account on Twitter, @IslesBlogger. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode.